This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com, and in this talk I wanted to talk about Dinesh D'Souza. I don't know how many of our readers are familiar with this individual, but he's the author of some best-selling books, quote, New York Times bestsellers, about God and religion and Christianity, and he claims to be Catholic, and he's gotten a lot of publicity in creationist circles. And even on the mainstream media, he's been featured on television programs and so forth because he debates the prominent atheists who attack religion, such as Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins. And he basically tries to meet their atheistic arguments against God and against Christianity on an intellectual level and so forth. But the reality is the man is an evolutionist, falsely posing as a believer. And it's quite deceptive because for those who might not know better, they might think, well, he's debating the atheists, he's attacking atheism, therefore he believes in the Bible, he believes in creation and so forth, and he's maybe got some reliable information in that area. And the truth is just the opposite. First, what people need to realize is that the man is a believer in evolution. He believes in macroevolution. Yet at the same time, he, in his book, What's So Great About Christianity, another, quote, New York Times bestseller, frequently brings up the, quote, shortcomings of evolution. And of course, evolution, as any traditional Catholic who has the faith knows, is a complete hoax. It's refuted by all real science. But it's believed by basically everyone in the, quote, academic community, or at least those who are advanced to positions at almost all colleges and universities. And so on the one hand, he will criticize the, quote, shortcomings of evolution to make it seem like, you know, he's not agreeing with it, and that appeals to the creation audience. But then, a few pages earlier or a few pages later, he'll tell you that he believes in evolution, it's compatible with the Bible, and that there's no reason for anyone to reject it, and that those who reject it on biblical grounds are being rash and not really analyzing the evidence or what people really should know about the Bible. For example, in his book What's So Great About Christianity, on page 151, he says, quote, evolution remains the best and most persuasive account of our origins. It is impossible to deny the theory's explanatory power, end quote. And he goes on and on in this area about how he believes that evolution has been strongly proved. And I can't spend a lot of time refuting his false scientific arguments or directing people to those who have in detail refuted them. But we sell the book by Walt Brown in the beginning, which destroys all of the evolutionist arguments, addresses all of their false claims. And I want to quickly refute one that Dinesh D'Souza brings up. On page 150, he says, quote, one of the strongest proofs for evolution is that the geological record, for all of its imperfection, shows a single invariant trajectory. The oldest rocks contain only single-celled creatures. Later strata show the appearance of invertebrates. Then we see the first fish, then amphibians, then reptiles, and finally mammals. Man appears latest on the scene. The fossils are found in exactly the places and at exactly the times that we would expect if Darwin's theory is correct. Not a single fossil has ever been found in a place where it is not supposed to show up. Until this happens, and I don't think it will, evolution remains the best and most persuasive account of our origins. End quote. Well, obviously, Dinesh D'Souza doesn't know too much about this issue, and he's been reading the propaganda of the atheistic evolutionists rather than creationist works which address and blow this false claim out of the water, and in the process refute evolution according to his own argument. For if he says if you find examples of out-of-place fossils, it would refute Darwin's theory. In his book, in the beginning, Dr. Walt Brown summarizes some of the examples of out-of-place fossils on page 11. He says, quote, frequently fossils are not vertically sequenced in the assumed evolutionary order. For example, in Uzbekistan, 86 consecutive hoof prints or horses were found in rocks dating back to the dinosaurs. Dinosaur and human-like footprints have been found together in Turkmenia and in Arizona. Sometimes land animals, flying animals, and marine animals are fossilized side by side in the same rock. Dinosaur, whale, elephant, horse, and many other fossils, plus crude human tools, have reportedly been found in phosphate beds in South Carolina. A leading authority on the Grand Canyon even published photographs of horse-like hoof prints visible in rocks that, according to the theory of evolution, predate hoofed animals by more than 100 million years. Other hoof prints are alongside 1,000 dinosaur footprints in Virginia. And he goes on and on and on. I mean, there are just tons of examples which completely refute his false claim. Brother Michael also covers some points on the fossil record in his video, Creation and Miracles, Past and Present, which is on our website. And so what I want to point out is how wicked this is. This guy is like a Trojan horse, and not that he's that well known but by traditional Catholics, but he's, you know, featured on television and in some circles where creationists might expect him to be somewhat reliable on some of these issues, and he's sort of insinuating himself into creationist circles with this garbage. Now, I want to point out some of the devilish contradictions in his book. As I said, he likes to bring up the shortcomings, so he's trying to have it both ways, that basically evolution isn't a great explanation, but I believe in evolution. And I believe part of the reason that he is inclined to accept macroevolution, the absurd myth, is because if he did not, it would vastly cut down his audience. He wouldn't be on television, certainly not as much. He would be ostracized from the pseudo-intellectual academic community, which accepts evolution as dogma. And so basically it's very convenient for him to not condemn evolution. He would drastically cut off his audience. Another thing that I wanted to mention a little bit later is that this guy claims to be Catholic, actually, and some of the heresies he puts into his book are just incredible. And so he's not remotely a true Catholic. But in the area of page 149, he's arguing how, you know, numerous evolutionists are, quote, Christian, you know, trying to instill the compatibility of the two. And on page 156 and 7, he quotes a physicist who tries to explain basically how God created everything and then set evolution into motion. And it says, quote, "For one kind of life to evolve into another may be attributed to the blind forces of nature, but the anthropic principle implies that these forces were set in motion deliberately, purposefully, with a view to producing precisely the living beings that biologists superficially presume to have gotten here by accident," end quote. So he's quoting this physicist who says that evolution does explain things and that it operates according to the, quote, blind forces of nature, but that it is set in motion deliberately and purposefully by God. And this is a contradiction. He's trying to reconcile two opposed principles. And to further illustrate that, I will quote his own arguments that he makes. For instance, on page 152, he's arguing for the complexity of the genetic code, and he quotes someone to show that the genetic code is digital in exactly the same sense as computer codes, and he comments that each DNA molecule is an algorithm in biochemical code, and he quotes another author who says that the cell displays levels of regularity and complexity that exceed by orders of magnitude anything found in the non-living world, end quote. So he's making these arguments from a designer, from the incredible complexity of life, the design we find in DNA, the design and the complexity we find in the cell on this page, but just a few pages later telling us that we and all living creatures are the result of the blind forces of nature. And this doesn't make any sense. For why would God, who so finely tuned the creation, as he argues in one place, and with such amazing specificity designed our genetic code, then allow the bodies of all living things to come about through a process of trial and error, millions of years of suffering, failure, the blind forces of nature, etc.? It's completely incompatible with the argument that he so carefully crafted and constructed the cell and the DNA molecule. It's a contradiction. And if you can't see it, then you're just steeped in spiritual blindness. And so another point I wanted to make is that while this individual is in one way very learned, he knows a lot about history, philosophy, etc., his arguments are actually stupid. And so while he's respected as a great academic, he actually misses the simple points, and his argument is horrible. And that is what intellectual pride can do. Not only can it liberalize a person, but it can cause people, and always does basically, cause people to miss the simple big points. And so while they fancy themselves sophisticated and intelligent and learned, they actually become stupid. And so what we have in his book, and in the next part I want to talk about quickly how theistic evolution is not compatible with the Bible, some of his other liberal and heretical statements. And so what we have in his book is a back and forth. Another example would be how on page 150 he says that the eye can evolve. So he's attacking one of the most glaring examples of how ridiculous evolution is. The eye cannot evolve. But then just a few pages later, on page 153, he's talking about consciousness, how human beings are conscious, that we can experience and understand and know the world around us in a unique way. And he talks about human rationality and morality. And he argues that the existence of consciousness is counterproductive to evolution. And so this is extremely evil because even though what he's saying here is true, he's making it seem as if he doesn't believe in evolution when he's already told us that he believes that evolution is basically a proven fact and the best explanation. Now he's switching sides and saying that, well, the existence of consciousness actually weighs heavily against evolution. No, you can't have it both ways. And he tries to have it both ways, not only in terms of claiming to believe in the Bible and in evolution, but also claiming to believe in evolution and yet arguing against evolution frequently. Now, I want to quickly cover how Dinesh D'Souza claims to be a Catholic, but in fact is an outrageous heretic. He's obviously extremely liberal and ecumenical. For example, on page 11, he analyzes the movement, how so many former Catholics are converting to evangelical Protestantism. And he says that this conversion from being a lackadaisical or nominal Catholic to an active, energized evangelical Protestant can be considered a, quote, net gain for Christianity. So he's saying that it's good to convert to Protestantism, at least if you are only a lackadaisical Catholic. He is also saying that Protestantism is Christianity. So obviously he does not believe that Protestantism is heresy. On page 70, he even quotes Martin Luther. He says, quote, "During the Reformation, Martin Luther stressed the individualism of the Christian journey," end quote. I'm sorry, a Catholic cannot quote Luther unless it's to historically analyze his apostasy or condemn him or refute him, etc. To quote him on the Christian journey is to imply that he was a Christian in some way, a man who rejected a multitude of Catholic dogmas, said the Pope and Cardinal should be killed, and called the Catholic teachings basically a set of diabolical lies. I want to now talk about one of the most interesting understatements I've read in a long time. It's found in his book on page 60, and I think that this serves to illustrate his profound liberalism and wicked desire to appeal to the, quote, intellectual community. In this area of his book, he's analyzing how some of the ancient cultures, such as ancient Greece, were not quite as good as some people would like to think. And he's making some interesting points in this regard. He's pointing out how most marriages were arranged, and how the husband and wife were not even expected to be friends. And he's trying to point out how Christianity was beneficial to the world. And he's making some very interesting and good points on this subject. And he goes on to discuss how Eros was a powerful force in ancient Greece and how it expressed itself in homosexuality. He explains how it was common in Athens, homosexuality. And on page 60, he's explaining how they constructed an educational philosophy based on pederasty or pedophilia. And he explains how these sick individuals conceived pedophilia or pederasty in terms of an exchange. While the young boy agreed to sexual relations with an older man, and in return he received knowledge and tutoring. And about this abomination, Dinesh D'Souza comments, quote, "We may worry that the younger boy might be exploited in such a relationship, but the ancients did not," end quote. That's what he says after bringing out this sick abomination that was practiced in ancient Greece. He says that we may worry that the younger boy might be exploited in such a relationship, but the ancients did not. That's what I call the understatement of the year. Exploited, he's barely even criticizing it, if that. Obviously, he doesn't agree with it. I'm not saying that. But my point is that his language is so incredibly weak, he doesn't even muster up the courage to denounce it in no uncertain terms. But he says that we may worry that the young boy might be exploited, rather than pointing out this is evil, this is an abomination. And I believe the reason he is so weak in commenting on this is because he wants to appeal to the largest number of people possible and not ostracize those in the homosexual community, possibly, or be considered radical or condemnatory. And this is evil. On page 50, Dinesh D'Souza refers to Muhammad as, quote, the prophet. He says, "The prophet Muhammad was, in his own day, both a prophet and a Caesar, who integrated the domains of church and state," end quote. Now, he might claim that that's just what he's known as. No, a Catholic, in other words, a Christian, cannot refer to a false prophet who began a false religion as the prophet. On page 21, he makes some comments which I think show how empty his heretical outlook is. As we've discussed, he believes in evolution, and so he's arguing for the positives of religion. And he says, quote, "Religious people develop a zest for life that is, in a sense, unnatural. They exhibit a hopefulness about the future that may exceed what is warranted by how the world is going," end quote. And so it's just quite empty that that's basically what religion does for you. It just gives you a zest for life. But as it's mixed in with his contradictory evolutionary arguments, his heretical religious indifferentism, etc., it leaves you with a void and a powerlessness to the message he's promoting. And there are other things I could mention, but I'll just end by quickly pointing out that perhaps the biggest lie in his book, What's So Great About Christianity, is that evolution is compatible with the Bible. It is most assuredly not. And I'll just give a few quick examples. Evolution. Even theistic evolution believes that man evolved from a lower animal, whereas the Bible clearly says that Adam was formed from the dust, not from a lower animal. So that's a clear error if you believe in evolution as Dinesh D'Souza does. We also read in Mark 6, verse 10, where Jesus says that, quote, "From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female," end quote. Well, that is clearly incompatible with the belief that the earth was formed and creatures existed for millions of years, and then came man and woman. Jesus is saying that from the very beginning of creation, God made them male and female. There are many other points we could cover, such as how theistic evolution believes that the first creatures were simple sea creatures, whereas the Bible says that the first animals created were very developed whales, mammals. Theistic evolution teaches that all forms of life have a common ancestor, and that there are transitions between all different forms of life, whereas the Bible teaches that there are different kinds of creatures, and each kind reproduces after itself. There are many other points that could be covered, but I'll just quote Dinesh D'Souza on page 147 of What's So Great About Christianity, speaking of Darwin's theory. He says, quote, "There is no reason to reject it purely on biblical grounds," end quote. And that is probably the biggest and most deceptive falsehood in his book. His book, which is becoming somewhat popular and has been declared a, quote, New York Times bestseller, the liberal media has no problem promoting it, probably because it can serve to amalgamate the creationist movement with the evolution hoax, and thereby attempt to destroy the movement for truth in that area.